ngiphahlela. I really like what you are doing. You kiss me and doing very well. Oh, good morning, Stella. Why is it crazy? What's wrong with you? This is un-ANC, man. Then you are in trouble, I'm telling you. Honorable Colonel Khanat Mati. Khan Khut, man. Today we are doing the reserve force. And yesterday when we left each other, Mr. Mazia was saying that 7, Section 104 of the Principal Act, after an explanation, it means unamended in the way it was presented. But what were the presenters saying is that we take it from this side, we bring it to page 3 of the document. That's where the reserve force is. The Secretary of Defense is apologizing today. She is in a press conference. And she's also got the Chief of Defense are all meeting, what they call the court. Is that what it is? COD, what is? It's a very educated name. What does it mean? Council of Defense. You must educate members of parliament. What is that one? Because we'll hear next time that we must put it in as a reserve council because it's council. What is that? How are you, David? You are a star again in the newspaper. You are a celebrity, my man.
I'm very well, thank you, Chair, and deeply relieved that the annual report was not classified.
Hey, David, I'm telling you. Now you're fighting with our minister about classifications and whatnot. You see, that's yours. Must not write it into law now. You see, that's the only concern we have. Yeah. Legal advisor from Parliament, do you have anything today? Or would you really like us in the way we are conducting ourselves?
I can just say I'm fine.
Now, we are going to do the reserve force today. Do you have the A list ready? Because we're only going to vote next week. I just wanted to make sure that members of parliament, when they leave, they know exactly what is in the A list. State law advisor, how organized are you?
Chair, I have prepared the A list. We will just need to make copies available to all the members through the secretary. And Chair, you may need amendment if today there will be any further proposed amendments. But I am ready to the attention.
No, I know that they are very eager young men, very energetic. You know, sometimes want to chair the committee. It's not that they don't give you that privilege. No, I know that it's ready. So there will be a copy of the A list, members, and then you can have a look at it and see if there's any amendment that is outstanding. And then as the state law advisor says, by next week, would have the total list, and we then go through, and then the B, you call it the, what is the next bill? Yeah, the B, the next bill will be ready by next week, and then we can start voting on it. So we're not going to vote today, Babu Mphahlele. We're just going to do, majorly, we're just doing the reserve force now, and then we'll be finished for the day. And then the military command would come in as part of the A list because it was not in the bill itself. So the solution was that it goes into an A list, then it comes back in that way that it becomes part of the bill overall that we have discussed. Is that clear, Tatum Pala? Yeah. No, the way you're looking at me. kare no ikhona lento ongayiphiliziyo kahle la. Is that correct, state advice?
That's correct, sir, no problem.
Okay, let's get then the copies done. I'll ask Minnie to come and take it from you. Honorable members, the reserve force is on three. Mazia has already said we should conclude one matter that is related to faith. So, on three, we are talking about amendment of Section 53 of Act 42 of 2002. That Section 53 of the Principal Act is hereby amended, and those are the proposals that are appealed with the amendment. Is there anybody who's got anything to say about it? Stella? Utata Mlangen is looking for a place to sit. Ahlala phecoka. Uyohlala phecoka, Mtata Mlangen? Uhleli. Sukwenzi anakhe. Ah, marwenzi anakhe.
Sukwenzi chairperson, congratulations to my ANC for having won both the by-elections
in
the Western Cape.
No. It's not a lie. No. can we be patient? I'm not running by elections. I'm running the defense today. Mr. Mlangeni is looking for you.
Sorry for winning both by elections, Mena.
Chair, yesterday I said that I wasn't good at numbers, but it's not true. You always have to look at percentages. Two of how many in total?
Okay, no, David, I can't have a discussion about by-elections. Aman is a portfolio of defense and military veteran.
It's even worse if two political parties are defeated.
But, Chair, let me be magnanimous against one party.
Can I get, honorable member, can you behave, please? That the man when he introduced anarchy, and now that anarchy is taking over the committee here.
Sure, I would like to be magnanimous and compliment the ANC on its victory last night.
I said to you, Maynard, can you stop? You see? Okay. No, it's not about you. I've got other parties here. You see, so much respect. You see? Ah, now you see now. Stella, you're starting another battle. You see now, the officials are running away. They think it's not fair, you see. Can we go down into the beer? The bill is on, we are at page 3 of the bill. So you are saying that the question that was raised about faith, are you happy about what was said? Honorable Khunaba? Around the argument about faith, that it was addressed on the 18th. So it means that Section 7 is going to go over into the main analysis and become one of the clauses. They will sort it out while they do the overall bill. Is that correct, Mr. Baran? It looks as if you are a little bit shocked.
Referring to Clause 7, sir. Now, Clause 7, if I understand correctly, is that not a clause that deals with offenses. Chair, that clause will not join 53. No, it in the Act, it will join the offenses in the Act, which is Section 104. That's why we amend Section 104. So it's not going to be part of 53, but it will be part of 104. So in the B version, when you look at the offenses now, you'll see a new innovative, which will be this amendment.
Just before you talk, state law advisor, there was a point made about the Reserve Force Council, its role or its contribution. I know I didn't rule yesterday,
that it, if we need to, whilst we are acknowledging that we are not going to bring it up to the level of the Secretary of Defense and the Chief of Defense, you just have to acknowledge that there's supposed to be some consultation when in whatever is in the principal act, that we don't forget about the Reserve Force Council. I don't know how you're going to put it. Or you, I know that what the Secretary of Defense said. I can see you are skeptical, but I'm just saying that don't forget the Reserve Force Council as part of those that we need to be able to consult. Are you on which one now? On the bill? On the council? Okay, say, you want to say something about it? I didn't want... Yeah, no, I was just taking acknowledge of it. But you can, we'll talk about it when we go to watch close. Okay, fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. You're shooting like a shotgun this morning. It's all over the places. Then you're jumping from clause 7 and then you're pulling it. Yeah. Okay, I just want to have clarity on clause 7. Let's go back to clause 7. The word "or fails" will be replaced by "or without valid reason." If I understand that correctly, then I'm happy. Your other one is clause 5, 62B, D, 4, which I ask for the insertion of a Reserve Force Council. Clause 5, 62B, D for Delta, 4. Yeah, the functions of the commission. Yeah, it says consult with the Secretary for Defense, the Chief of the Defense Force, and the insertion then was my proposal for Reserve Force Council, members of the Defense Force, and any other, and so forth. And then, just for the interest of the meeting chairperson, ancillary in Afrikaans means bykomstig. So I did my homework.
Shooting from the hip today, I can see. Yeah. That is C2B. We'll keep it there. And then I know that Mr. Mlambo does have a comment he wants to make about the Reserve Force Council. Can I? Of immediately, I just wanted to deal with the Reserve Force, and after that, I'll come back to that Reserve Force edition. Is that okay, Mr. Mlambo? Okay, bye. You've been commenting about others. I thought that you're commenting about...
Yeah, I want to ask you, person, are we also now dealing with clause 3?
We are there. That's what I wanted you to comment about.
Oh,
but
okay.
Because you were following the chairperson, you started shooting all over the floor.
I think... Just before the chairperson starts. Now, chairperson, as far as clause 3 is concerned, we have to consider the matter where it says the minister must give the member notice of his or her intention to terminate the membership of the member. You remember that there was an argument, which I agree with, that the administrative aspect of that is going to take very long. Where I think there was a proposal, I don't have it in front of me, I can quickly look, even from the Reserve Force Council themselves, where it says, I think in the line of members within a certain time, within 18 months after the commencement of the defense, enter into a contract. And after that 18 months, if they did not enter into the contract, then automatically they're not a member anymore. Rather than go the way to where the minister must give the member notice. That was the argument.
Yes, it did. That you are talking about clause here, it's 3AA. If you look at B, yes, there. It says the members of the Defense Force contemplated in paragraph A must, within 18 months after the commencement of the Defense Amendment Act 2010, enter into a contract of service with the Defense Force as contemplated in subsection 1A. Yeah. Should any member fail to conclude a contract contemplated in subparagraph 1, the minister must give the member notice of his or her intention to terminate the membership of the member. This is where you are.
That's correct, Chairperson. And the proposal is that that 2B2 should be amended. If I read it, in fact, I would say that we can delete that one and then go directly to 3. 3 will become 2 then, and the minister must terminate the membership of the member if such member fails to conclude the contract following the notice. But that the notice in 1. But in 2, it says, that's the same one. Yes, they've got 1, 2, 1. The numeration is quite a lot here. You will remember that it actually meant that the minister had to write a letter to each and everyone. And if they do not respond, what happens then? It doesn't really say.
I allow other people to comment to what they are saying, because it does say that 1, 2, 3, it gives you the notice provided by the minister to that particular member who has not responded to the invitation that they must become part and be contracted by the SANDF. Now, the argument would always go that legally, it seems sound that must notify a person, at least for him to know that you are going to take action. So that too for me was covering that the minister is notifying the member extending that you have not complied with what has been agreed upon by the legislation currently. Can you please do something? And then it's only when you have not responded to that notice, then 3 falls in. So you can't miss those steps. All 3 of them are quite necessary steps. That has to be up. We have to agree and keep them in the legislation. That's how I understand them, that those steps are being outlined in that way. But I would allow members to comment if they want. The legal people will comment later if they have got anything. I had taken note of you, David. Have you withdrawn?
Chair, I wanted to make a point on a different matter, so I will hold back for now.
Different matter in which sense? In the bill? In this particular one or somewhere else?
Chair, I wanted to consider clause 3D3AA, which reads, a reserve force member must comply with the call-up order issued by that member's commanding officer, etc. I can speak to that point now, but... Okay. Chair, 3D3AA reads, a reserve force member must, and the operative word here is must, comply with the call-up order issued by that member's commanding officer in terms of which such a member must report for service as contemplated in this act or the Constitution. And if my understanding of the legislation is correct, if that reserve force member failed or failed to comply, he or she would then be guilty of an offence. Now, the question here is, reserve force members do have the right, in terms of the principal act, I think it's 67, to apply for exemption or deferment. Should we not amend the section to read, a reserve force member must comply, but put in a rider, unless that member has applied to the exemption board for exemption and or deferment?
You say in the Principal Act, yes, the member is covered.
Well, Chair, I mean, this might be a matter to you that our legal advisors may want to comment on, but I mean, a very plain reading of this clause, a reserve force member must comply. The principal act does make provision for an exemption board where a member can, in a prescribed process, apply for exemption and or deferment. And I believe that we should amend this clause to make provision for that and to provide the rider. This clause is, if you recall correctly, I think the clause that I referred to as being slightly Zukovian. It's a fairly draconian clause.
You see what I'm trying to, why I'm interested in you trying to contest that. I'm trying to find out, you know, this is the defense. And any other person who wants to come to the defense must comply, you see. And if you want to weaken them, is to write an ambiguous law, which gives, in, you know, as I said yesterday, sometimes the police, you try to see, you preempt them and say you want to be very humanistic, Bill of Rights and all those things. And find that people are abusing this particular part, and that it has weakened the service itself. So, in the words that you use, sometimes there's effect to those words. So, I'm saying to that must, to me, remain part of the commanding authority that exists in the defense, that you are being commanded. There's no business that you are a businessman or whatsoever. You are being commanded because you have complied with everything that SNDF wants you to. So, the command is you. Come back to your call up and get into the reserve force. Now I'm saying that if you say let's interfere with that, what doctrine are we going to be beginning to promote? You see, because ill discipline will creep in there. I mean, in the principal act, they are given whenever to appear and all those things, but we are trying to say to them, let's maintain the commanding doctrine that says you must come back to, and you have been commanded as a soldier to be at your post at that particular time, and that has been done by your commander. Why do you want to interfere with that?
Chair, I mean to use Advocate Sonora's formulation of yesterday, what mischief are we trying to remedy? And I accept that this is a military institution, and when a member of the reserve force is called up, he must show up. He or she must show up. But there may be circumstances in which individuals have valid reasons why they cannot show up. And therefore, the Principal Act does make provision for an exemption process. And I think that we should recognize that, if you like, right, and that we should, to a certain extent, qualify this clause, but with making the meaning clear that there's an obligation on a member to show up unless he or she is able to show that he or she has, in a proper way, applied to the exemption board for deferment or exemption.
Thank you, Chairperson. I really don't see the argument of Honorable Maynard here, because as I've just explained, you see, we are trying to avoid a unionization of our defense. So if here we are going to use soft words, you know, in a military institution like the SANDF, I don't think we'll be doing justice. So I will suggest that we leave this clause as it is. Thank you, Chairperson.
You see, Minister, Honorable Minister, that 67 is about application for exemption. It's nothing, it doesn't have anything much to do with the call-up here. You see, it comes up as a follow-up that when you have not complied or you have got reasons, you are being given, according to the Constitution, an opportunity for you to be able to put up your case. But Mr. Mlambo is saying, if you change that, you then start using softer languages Then tomorrow, because you're a businessman, you then say, no, I'm part of the reserve force, but I'm still lasering around here in the township, you see. But if it says that you respect the institution called the SNDF, you have to come to the call-up. You have to respect your commander. You can't want to have a second guest when your commander has given you an instruction. And what you are beginning to bring in is to want us to create an opportunity for a second guest, so that we then undermine the institution. Because reserve force people are really sometimes civilians. It could be Mazia walking around here in parliament. He doesn't want to go to the call-up, but he enjoys the badge of having been called a reserve force person. You know, he walks around with a letter. He then forgets to go and tell the commander that he is not there on time. So for me, that's 67. There's nothing contested about that 67. 67 stands as it is. But to try to bring it into the legislation, as you are saying, that we are not changing the principal act, we are amending wherever it is necessary. But here, we are saying that must comply should really remain as a word of instruction to you whenever you know. And then you can, beyond that, you can start arguing your case as it is. You see. Then the Act 67 is providing for you. You can then go in and apply and explain your story. Why didn't you make it? I mean, like, you know, Mr. Honorable Khunavat, when he didn't attend meetings, he then used the excuse of the commission. He said, say that I'm busy attending to the commission work. You see, that's the exemption you gave him, you see, for him not to come to the committee. You see? So it is always there that we are going to give you that privilege. And 67 is about that privilege for you to argue your case. But to change the wording, it's going to become a little bit of a problem. Now, I come to you, legal advisors. I'm just trying to stick together members to be ready for politics of the bill that they are going to pass today. Are we together there? Is there anything that members have on 53 before I give it over to the legal advisors? Honorable Khunavat?
Thank you, Chair. I make my argument as far as 53AB2 is concerned. If I can get that comment, and if there's no agreement with me, can I then just want to say that if we say that the member affords such a member a reasonable opportunity to conclude the contract, what is a reasonable opportunity?
I will subject it to some legal advice. Is that I also wanted the members of parliament to comment on some of each other's views, so that we seem to, if we can have some understanding. Yeah. Not that I can't reject. I just wanted to put it on into different ways of thinking. But I'm going to allow other members of parliament to, or the legal advice to comment. Is there anything that members of parliament wants to raise to our, bring to our attention? So, the legal advice from Parliament says that 7 Honorable Mazia will stand there because it's part of the offence, where it is called Amendment of Section 104, Act 42 of 2002. That means on page 8 it will stand like that. I mean, with some of the amendments proposed. It's not going to move over to page 3. Page 3, if there's no other comments, it means that we are finished with it, and I'll give it over to the legal advisors to give some comments. I'll give you, Mr. Cronenberg. I'm just giving the process now. That if I don't want to hold you there the whole day. That's what I'm trying to avoid. If you don't have much to say about Section 53, and the legal advisors are advising you, and you're quite satisfied, don't push yourself to talk. You'll be quite happier that you have considered that Section 53 was crafted in a very proper way. Yeah, okay, that's fine. And then I'm going to allow Mandy to circulate to you after this one, the A list, so that in the meantime you could also look at it. After this one, we'll then deal with the A list quickly. And then it seems as if the meeting would have been finished by that time. Honorable Khunavat?
Chairperson, just on clarity, because as I said, we're jumping around. I just want to make sure again that subclause C of 53 has been deleted. That's what we agreed, I think, yesterday or the day before yesterday. I just want to confirm that again. Yeah, the substitute, yeah, see, it's by the substitution. And I think that was actually on the advice of the legal advisors.
Yes.
But I just want to confirm it again.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's not jumping around. That is consistent. That's very good of you. Okay. State law advisor and the legal department. I'll start with the parliamentary advice. And then from there on, I'll give you the advice. Babu Bana.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity. I'll start with Honorable Grunewald's query on B, Roman Figure 2. From my interpretation of this section, or this proposed amendment, as it is, it complies with the promotion of Administrative Justice Act, because it affords a member an opportunity to be heard before a decision that would adversely affect him or her is taken by the minister. If the member fails to comply, then the minister writes to the member, given an opportunity to comply. Then 3 says, if the member, notwithstanding the opportunity given to him or her to comply, fails to do that, then 3 kicks in. The minister can terminate the membership. So legally, I would not see anything wrong with that construction. What is meant by a reasonable opportunity? Reasonable opportunity, what the department wants to do, they refrain from prescribing to the minister a specific time frame within which the relevant minister can terminate the contract after the failure to comply by the member. For a simple reason, they acknowledge that there could be different circumstances that needs to be treated differently. And what is meant by a reasonable opportunity is what in law is a test called an objective test. In other words, given the particular circumstances, what will be a reasonable opportunity will depend on the particular circumstances of each and every case. And I think it is a good thing to do, because if you prescribe a period there, you might sit with unnecessary litigation, because you find that the minister terminates a contract because the member was not, who did not comply. And the member comes up with an explanation that explains, and in those circumstances it is found that it was reasonable for the member not to attend to the call-up. I think that will be my response in respect of that specific paragraph. In respect of paragraph C, I think what needs to be taken out there is not necessarily the entire subsection, but it's only the bolded, the words that are bolded in black. Those are the words that will be taken off this particular subsection. In respect of Honorable Maynard's question on 3 capital A, paragraph A, the linking of this particular subsection with Section 67. I think I need to mention that perhaps when the legislature write laws, and these laws are interpreted, they are not interpreted in isolation of the existing laws. Yes, the Honourable Member is correct that this particular clause obliges the member to honour the call-up. However, if justifiable reasons in law could be adduced by a member for his or her failure to honour the call-up, in law there's what we call defences. I'm not going to sit here and try and enumerate a list of defense of possible defenses, but let it suffice it to say that in law there are defenses that could be raised to deal with this specific issue that will lead to a member who has reasonable or legitimate grounds for failing to honor the caller, not necessarily or not being found guilty, or not even being charged. And I want to point the risk of linking this particular section with 67. See, the risk then would be you would, in the interpretation of this particular provision, be creating an impression that the only instance where one could not comply with this particular provision would be that someone must prove that he or she had submitted an application for an exemption. In other words, you're limiting the possible defenses that could legitimately be raised in law. So I think there's danger there. I would support the current construction. Thank you, sir.
Advisor or who comes first?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, briefly, the issue of giving a reserve force member a further opportunity after the 18 months has expired to conclude a contract, Chair. The subtle resistance, in my view, Chair, would not, there's no reason for a legal challenge, because in effect it is giving the member an opportunity again, Chair, to comply with concluding a contract. I concur with my learned colleague, Mr. Van Aar, Chair, that there's no danger here of a legal challenge. And the issue of the reasonable opportunity, Chair, I concur with his argument that it will depend on the circumstances, Chair, what is reasonable or not. Chair, the issue of this paragraph C, it is the issue of legislative drafting, Chair. In my view, I would propose that it be taken completely away, because if it is not taken completely away, there will be no point of having it in the bill itself, because there is no amendment, no omission, anything. So in my view, that Chair, it should be taken completely away. The issue of subclause 3, paragraph 3D, 3A. So if we include a proviso that a person must comply with a call-up order, but that person may also apply for exemption, then on the face of it, the person would always have an escaping gate, Chair, for the person not to comply with the call of order. 67 is there to be implemented. 3A does not preclude the person from applying for exemption in terms of Section 67, Chair. Thank you. I propose that they close there as it is. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also concur with the explanation provided by my two colleagues there. And in particular, I would like to comment on this this act, the insertion of the exemption clause. I think the clause 7, where we say valid reasons for failure, will cover that that 67. In the case where the person has already been exempted, it's for that person to provide the exemption certificate, or maybe to provide reasons that he or she's in the process of applying for exemption. So it is covered. We don't need to put it in this other clause. Thank you.
A few quick points. I think that there is always a tendency to read the bill separately from the principal act. And that's why these issues keep on coming up. Exemption in terms of 67 applies to everybody in the defense force, whether you are a reserve force or you are a regular force. So it's not necessary for us to take these clauses which already exist in the act and insert in every amendment that we are proposing. And I think the same applies to the issue of the reserve force. That's the point I was trying to make yesterday, that Section 48 already deals with the issue of consultation. It is compulsory for the reserve force to be consulted, reserve force council, I mean, to be consulted on any matter that affects the reserve force. But the danger, if you include that specific clause in this one, what it means is that the commission will have to consult with the reserve force council, even if there is nothing that affects the reserve force council. So I think that's the danger, but there is an overall clause which covers consultation with the reserve force council where the interests of the reserve force are at stake. But the other issue, Chair, which I think Honorable
Marcel, you are opening up a discussion on that one, the reserve force council.
Yes.
I'm going to put it aside. I'm going to talk about it when you finish.
All right, Chair.
Yes, because I know it's going to be contested. So be ready for it, that contestation is going to be reflecting on the views that are expressing.
Okay.
But you can proceed now.
Chair, on the issue that was raised by the Reserve Council with regard to the minister providing notice, as far as I could remember, the issue was never a legal one. It was a practical question. The concern that was raised was, given that the Reserve Force has a complement of about 30,000 people, let's say half of those people do not sign a contract within that 18 months, does it mean the department now must administratively issue all those notices to those people? So the concern was twofold, the administrative burden and the level at which we are pitching the whole thing, because we are saving the minister. So their concern was maybe it should lapse automatically at the end of the 18 months. Or that at least we should allow for the delegation of that to the lowest level where it can be done. So I think that's something that the committee may want to consider. Chair, I agree with the state law advisor that with regard to C, you will remember we had indicated on the first day, that proposal with regard to excluding the remuneration is being withdrawn. So what it means basically is that C, as it stands, should be completely omitted from the amendment bill. Thank you, Chair.
I must say you have opened up two issues. And if you are consulting, you know, I can't disturb you. And getting legal advice yourself from another legal advisor. I was saying, when you say it's about the pitching, you see, I just wanted to get more clarity from you. Is it just pitching or is it to maintain what we have now, you know, been emphatic about, that this is the ministerial bill, you see. So whatever you give to the minister can delegate. So that our own concerns, which has been arising, that why do you want to give a mere administrative responsibility to the minister? Wouldn't that be felt that it has been covered, that the minister will build their own capacity in how she runs the contract and give that over there? But the responsibility of how people and complaints are being raised becomes a ministerial responsibility, that he looks into those responsibilities. It doesn't get delegated anywhere else. So that if it does come up with litigations or any other problem, it can be said that he has escaped. He must take responsibility. That's how I read the bill after we have been able to convince us about the ministerial involvement, that the minister wants to take full responsibility even for the reserve force in the way she conducted a particular relationship. That is my first comment. The Reserve Council, you know why I am very sympathetic to Mr. Honorable Groenewald. You know the complaint is that it's ignored. In all the years of changing of ministers, there's no minister who engages them. It was historical for us to know about them and for us to be able to engage them during this period. So out of not being taken seriously within the department and nobody engaging them, but they feel obliged that they're using state resources, that something has to be done where we bring them up, that so that people can, or the minister and everybody can continuously engage in them rather than ignoring them there as a council and nothing being done with them. That, for me, is one of the things that I was reading in their contribution, that they are an ignored body. It happens with many bodies. That's not the only body. I know that as we're going to do the annual report, even the internal audit of the defense, for years we have not been applying our mind, what is it doing there in that department? We just see the department getting qualifications, but the internal auditor sits there and we don't know what is it doing. So there's a number of embodiments that are within the SNDF that are getting ignored and are playing very crucial roles within the defense. So the Reserve Council seems to be playing an important role within the reserve, but they feel a little bit ignored. So maybe that's where my sympathy was lying with what Honorable Groenewald was trying to bring to our attention, that if you continue giving them a responsibility and you emphasize, it's an empathic point to say that let them be consulted. That's what I was reading. Am I correct, Mr. Groenewald? That he does. Now, he's a veteran of a soldier. He would know more better that when you ignore these type of institutions within the defense, they become a little bit compromised and they get forgotten. But in the meantime, they're using the resources of the state. And quite clearly, that component is traveling around the world, meeting people, is doing a lot of things, but nobody's talking to them. That's why we also are forced and bound now to think about them within Parliament. So that's all I was saying. Maybe it's out of that concern that we said, let's re-emphasize wherever the Secretary of Defense and the Chief of Defense is doing their job, the Reserve Post Council must not be forgotten. I'm just bringing that background to the argument. Honorable members, the legal minds have spoken. Do you have anything to say in terms of what they have spoken about, or do you accept that CEC is going to go? They are saying so, Mr. Banar. Their feeling is that C must go. It doesn't carry any much to do with this particular bill. You want to say something, Mr. Banar? I've seen the lawyer from the minister's office. Let's see you there, sir. You are also a legal representative from the minister's office. I'm talking about you, sir.
Honorable Chair, no.
Oh, yeah, that's a political advice. I must always know, Chief. Don't want you to feel that we are not giving you an opportunity in this committee. Mr. Banai?
No, sir. The department is suggesting that subsection 2 of section 53 be deleted in its entirety. Which is now C in the amendment from the bill. So it remains in the principal act. Now it's fine, but it's just the manner in which you put it, because you say the entire section must be taken out. Now, it's, yeah, the only thing that needs to be taken Oh, okay. No, it's fine. It's fine. No, I follow that, sir. Thank you.
I appreciate that. That's why Parliament has employed you. You must defend us from the department. Can I have you, Mr. Khurun? Oh, I'll have Mr. Mlambo and I'll have you, Honorable Khurun.
Thank you, Chairperson. You were saying you will recognize me when we reach this thing of the Reserve Force Council, but they have ignored me now because they have touched on it. And some of the issues I wanted to speak to, because my understanding is that this council has been there for 16 years, and there was a question as to every defense minister who comes in, like we are saying, they ignore this concern. And if they can clarify, how long should they be there, the period that they are appointed by the minister? Because we didn't get that. And the issue, I'm talking to everybody, Dada. You can't hear me.
Tatumlangi. Tatumlangi, don't bully Umlangi.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Oh, okay. Tell me, you saw it when you saw my Keep an eye. I know yeah. Soweto boys are always problematic, so I must keep an eye on this.
And the yes. Other question. Yeah, the other question was that they wanted to be, or the general responsible for the reserve be included in the military command. So if those issues can also be clarified, thank you.
The last one, we will discuss it when we discuss the military command. Yeah. I thought that the department seems to have an opinion now. Now, say on the military command and the Reserve Force Council, what I hear, the way the Secretary of Defense was agitated yesterday, I suspected that you had an opinion now than before. Before, you didn't have an opinion. So that one will be addressed when we give you the A list. Can anybody give some more information about the Reserve Force Council?
Thank you, Chair. No, I mean, somebody can give more information on the Reserve Force Council. I mean, if you look at 48, Section 48 of the Main Act, we must just remember that the Reserve Force Council is established by the Minister. The Minister appoints the members of the Reserve Force Council, and says quite clearly, the Minister must establish a Reserve Force Council. The Minister must appoint no fewer than 9 and no more than 18 persons to the Reserve Force Council, and must designate one of them as a chairperson. So the Reserve Force Council is appointed by the minister. There's no misunderstanding as far as that is concerned. And can I say, chairperson, and you're quite right, and I also think from the view of the commission, it is one thing to say yes, but Section 48, say in the principal act that they must be consulted. The fact of the matter is the commissioners, do they now really going to take the complete whole act, the principal act, and acquaint themselves as far as each and every point is that is concerned? I say no. They're going to take this, well, it's going to be part of the principal act, and they're going to see what are their functions. Therefore, I say it will be a good thing to insert it there. Yes. At the later stage, if they do not consult them, then the Reserve Force Council have to write them a question and say, sorry, but according to Section 48, you have to consult us. That is one way. But why don't put it in there? Then they know it. That is that argument. I want to ask, coming back to Section 53, Chairperson, and I quite agree. There's nothing wrong the way Subsection 2 is put forward there. There's nothing wrong. But it is, as the law advisor from the DoD said, do we have to go through all that administration? And I understand the promotion of Administrative and Justice Act. But my question will now be, if you take it out, this is really a contravention of the PAYA Act. I don't really see that. Because, you know, you're giving them 18 months. It's a year and a half. Then you have to give them notice. Besides the fact that the minister must give them notice, I know, she will delegate it. So that can take another, say, 12 months. So we're talking about two and a half years just to finalize this. I think that's too long. If you give them the access that you have to enter into a contract within 18 months, the Act stipulates that, then if you don't do it in that time, then you're out. I mean, you have the option. And I mean, it is not that you're working with civilian structures as such. You're working with military structures. I mean, it's disciplined people. Not that I mean that civilian structures are not disciplined, but I mean, if you're a member of the reserve force, you have a commander, and they will be called up or called in and say, listen, these are the legal obligations. You have 18 months to make a decision. And my question then finally, Chairperson, if we take it out, and I understand all the legal explanation about reasonable time and all that sort of thing, but that's exactly my problem. Because reasonable time, according to objective test, is dependent on each and every individual case. And that can be a very long, drawn-out process. Will it be illegal, if I can put it that way, if we take it out? Are there certain other legal consequences? Is it really a contravention of the PAYA Act at that stage? Thank you, Chair.
Anyone from the legal minds wants to respond to Mr. Cronenwald's concern and give us information about the Reserve Force Council? If I can keep going. You see, I mean, if we read that 48 correctly more, the council is a consultative and advisory body representing the reserve force in order to promote and maintain that force as an integral part of the defense force and must be consulted on any legislation, policy, or administrative. So it does really become an important embodiment to be consulted because it represents the 30,000 people that they are interfering with or that they are asking or that they are contracting that must come off. So that if there are problems, the council would have to be able to assist the ministry in how it is conducting its own business. So consultation with it becomes very valuable because it's within the law and it's a responsibility imposed by the legislation, the Principal Act. So maybe there is 48 Fundega State Law Advice. Number four. So it does really say that it's an important embodiment when you're dealing with the reserve force. You see, Mr. Cronenwald, what doesn't then convince me from your side, we are right to say let's maintain the law, but you see also to take away my privilege as an individual and the fact that I feel so, it's a voluntary thing to come into the reserve force. And you do it because sometimes you like it, if you like the military. I think, let's give you reasonable time. Let's give you reasonable time because, you know, to lose membership of the reserve force means that you'll never come back when the minister acted against you. Maybe there is some few things that you couldn't do on time or you still want to. Let the minister sound very good. Also, you see, it maintains some constitutional thing, but it's a constitutional state that your rights must not be usurped. Just like that, at the whim of a pen, you see. You have maintained, you have given an explanation. If out of human reason, the minister still think that it's still humane to give you that opportunity to go and pick up your businesses, there is some relevance that your business was flooded in Europe and you had to go there, but you are still loyal to the SNDF and you still want to play a particular role, let's give you that opportunity as an individual. So I'm just coming for a case of a person who's in the street wouldn't be, who still were eagerly and very common. I mean, I know a number of former soldiers who are running different bodies of the SNDF, even though we were there during the SATF. They are still committed to those bodies. They are still doing a lot of work. They are still committed to the SNDF. That for them to be in the military is something nice. I mean, look at General Olomisa. If you don't say General Olomisa, he thinks that you are undermining him. He still feels that you must call him general so that his authority as a general is being maintained. I mean, we're members of parliament, but it's his own attachment to the military, and it's something that goes with what we have gone through within the military. So people become very sentimental sometimes with this type of involvement in this type of institution. Let's give them an opportunity to engage and talk, maybe meet the minister somewhere in a plane, and he expresses his feelings and how he felt. It's very humane. Let's give him the opportunity, man, to...
I'll accept, Chairperson. I will stop thinking in a military way. So I'll stop my military thinking. It's all right.
Thank you, Chairperson. But on the issue of the reserve force council, the problem that you are stating here is that they are being ignored. By putting it again in another clause that they should be consulted, it's not really going to solve that problem. We can still put it again, as you say, as an emphasis. But are they still not going to be ignored by doing that? This Section 48, I agree with Mr. Njigela, does give the Commission that authority or right to consult with the Reserve Force Council. What is important is that the people who should be consulting the Reserve Force Council must be named, you know, to consult. But by putting it over and over in an act does not really say they will be consulted.
It comes from the department now, that the department is not eager to have it somewhere there, because it's not going to change the nature of them not being consulted. Tatu Kronova.
If I can respond to that, Chairperson, I hear what it is being said. The other way around is also true. They go through, they make some recommendations in the commission. Some other way, they did not consult the Reserve Force Council. Then the Reserve, after the recommendations, then the Reserve Force Council can turn around and say, oh, I'm sorry, Section 48 said, you must consult me. So all your recommendations are null and void because you did not consult me. So why do you want to go that route? I don't see any problem. I mean, if the argument is what they are in the Act, why do you have to put them in here? Why then do you have to put in the Defence Council? Because the Act also says, I mean, you can't do anything without the Defence Force Council. Why do we put in the Defence Force Council in here? Or the Command Council? I mean, then we don't need to put that in. It is to enhance the situation for the Commission. We're talking about the commission now to say, please don't forget to also consult with the Reserve Force. Thank you, Chair.
Please. It's too far. How many Reserve Councils are there? Is it only one, or there are many others? Only one.
The members are fewer than 9 and no more than 18.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you.
No, Chair, the only thing that I wanted to point out was the committee seems to be saying they want to put the Reserve Force Council in there to recognize their existence and for historical reasons. And the response is that Section 48 covers for that. And Section 48 refers to
Minister must establish a reserve force council. She must consult.
Yeah, 48.4, that's a consultation between the minister and the council.
And then 5, the minister, secretary for defense, and chief of the defense force may commission the council to execute any task or program or to investigate any matter pertaining to the reserve force in its interest. So they do have a relevance. I accept what the legal advice is saying, but it seems the day is carried by us that it has to be included. I acknowledge we'll have to carry the day, that let's go along with it. But if you read 5, it really says it, they must be consulted, and we're dealing with the reserve force council here, and we're dealing with the reserves. The only thing they say is the council does not have any powers of command. But at least they have to be consulted in matters related to policy within the reserve force. And being consulted by the defense doesn't take them off at all. It means that their own existence is quite crucial within the defense force. The weaknesses of how they get consulted can't be emphasized more than any other time. Let's give them the opportunity to be included there. We will engage them also as the department was. Ustad Mlangen is still interested to know what is the reserve force doing and who are we talking about. That's a question that is outstanding. We said we'll address it when we finish with the legislation. We'll have to invite the reserve force in itself to come and talk about their own role. But we say that let's include them where we're supposed to have included them. Emphasis or no emphasis, let's just go and do that. I understand all the concerns of the department, but they're also not convincing us. Why shouldn't they do that? I don't want us to get into how the department consults its own people. Let's just leave it there and include it. Honorable members, sikedile. Uyangizwa, Minister Mzi, sikedile ngoku. No, I was saying that the Defense Amendment Bill, in how it was placed in front of us in Parliament, we are finished with it at this particular moment. The thing that we are going to take through now is what was outstanding, what we call the A-list. And the state law advisor is going to be the one that is going to take us through. And then on Monday when we come back, on Tuesday, when we come to vote, we are going to be voting on a total new bill that would have been constructed based on our amendments. And also, then it means the inclusion of the Military Command Defense Force. That I will leave to the General to listen very patiently, that I have in the ranks of the as members of Parliament, to see if ever that Military Command is a good construction. This is a commanding structure in the country. And the powers, that's also one of the challenges that you're going to have to just clarify. Tata, state law advisor, is it you or do we start with the department? Give us guidance. Mama? State law advisor. Okay.
I assume, Chair, that since it is the department that is proposing most of the amendments, it was the department that would, especially the military command. But I will move forward, Chair, no problem.
State advice.
Let me see.
You only have capacity in your office. Yeah, it's me who's chairing. So, we soon do more than for this table.
Thank you, Chair. I hope all the members have or took documents in front of them. And the bill and also the A-list proposed amendment.
Not just the two members. I just wanted to make sure that even the everybody down there, do we have the two? Can you make sure, Menda, that everybody gets it?
No.
You must have the A-list.
you can't report back to the minister when you don't even know what we're talking about. Can you make sure? Tell the minister that he's got a number of dark classes that are walking around here. So I must make sure that these dark classes are getting some of this information. Mandy, do you have this A-list? Can you please make sure that the people get them down there? Why is there a delay there? Yeah? Does honorable members have the amendment bill and the A-list? Yes. Mandy? She's not distributing. We want to start. That's the point. That's the A-list starter. Yeah, you're like that, A-list law. Is everybody on board now? No, no, the well-educated people are going to explain to you.
Why is it called
A-list? He's going to tell you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Chair, at the end of the day, so on Tuesday, if there is a meeting, we're going to vote, there will be the B bill where all the agreed amendments will be incorporated. They will be in front of the committee in black and white. And there will also be the A list. It says A bill, but it's also called the A list. I don't know why they call it A list, but it is what is going to speak to the incorporated proposed amendments in the B bill. But Chair, let me go back. In the bill on page 2.
That's Kangmane Lab. I wanted you to also explain why it's 75 and the fact that it has to go to the National Council of Provinces and what happens when it gets cut back first, so that people don't get surprised about the process. Just finish all the processes for them.
Thank you, Chair. So the bill has been classified as a Section 75 bill in terms of the Constitution. Because in the Constitution, there is Schedule 4 and also Schedule 5. In Schedule 4, they are all competent areas that the National Department and the Provincial Departments may legislate on. They are listed there in black and white in the Constitution. And Schedule 5 are the exclusive areas on which only the provincial departments may legislate on. Now, Chair, in terms of Section 44 of the Constitution, the legislature is empowered to legislate on any matter that is conducive or that the legislature feels that it should legislate on. Now, in Schedule 4, in that list, you will find issues of defense and security. They will show you fall back on Section 44 of the Constitution. And Section 76 speaks only to Schedule 4 matters. Therefore, in the absence of the defense issues in Schedule 4, then the Constitution states that we have to follow the procedure of Section 75. And the procedure of Section 75, Chair, in terms of the Constitution, goes as follows. The National Assembly, via the Portfolio Committee, will adopt the bill. And then the bill has to go to the other House, Chair, the National Council of Provinces, via the Select Committee thereof. Chair, if the bill is passed by the National Assembly, it will go to the NCOP. The Select Committee there, Chair, will interrogate the bill. It will also call public hearings as they see fit. And then, Chair, if after the whole process, the Select Committee has some amendments, those amendments will not be incorporated. stated in the bill. That bill will be that PE version of the bill that will have been passed here. Instead, it will not incorporate any proposed amendments. Instead, it will have a separate bill list wherein it proposes amendments. And then those amendments will have to go back to this particular committee. And then the committee will decide whether or not to take them into account and incorporate them into the bill. If the portfolio committee decides to incorporate them, it will incorporate them. If it does not, then Chair, the bill must be forwarded to the president for signature. But Chair, the other process is that if the NCOP does not propose any amendments to the bill, then the bill can go straight to the president for signature. But the process is that you have to be followed. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, the document in front of everybody is a document called this is a proposed amendment to the Defense Amendment Bill. This is the proposed amendment, Chair. And the draft that we have in front of you, Chair, won't have the amendments that have been proposed today. It only has the amendments that were proposed yesterday because I will still have to amend it and include the ones that were proposed today. Now, Chair, on page 2 of the bill, you'll find that there's the long title, but I will come back to a long title later on. It is a technical amendment that is being proposed in the long title of the bill on page 2. I will come back to that later on, Chair. Chair, let's focus on the A list now. In clause 1, Chair, where there are definitions, after the deliberations of yesterday, there was a proposal that in paragraph G, on line 15, that there should be the word education in included. There was, Chair, in the list that is reflected in that way that the word training will be omitted. Then we just substitute education, training, and then it will go on and say, and development. So all those two phrases, education and training, will be incorporated in paragraph G, line 15 on page 2. The further proposal that was agreed by the committee, Chair, was that we should include grievance and grievance procedures. Therefore, Chair, it is necessary that we come up with a new paragraph, Chair, that's going to speak to that grievance and grievance procedures. Therefore, Chair, we'll have a new paragraph M, and then automatically the numbering will change. Then that reflects the agreement that was reached yesterday that we should have grievance and grievance procedures. Chair, there is a proposal that there should be a new clause that is going to deal with military command of the Defense Force. Chair, this proposal, I'm speaking to the fact that in the Constitution, the President appoints the military, military deputy chair. This proposal, Chair, is proposing that there be a list of who is the military command of the Defense Force. The proposal there, Chair, is listing all the entities that are going to comprise the military command. They are listed here, Chair, A up to I, the Chief of the Defense Force, the Chief of the South African Army, the Chief of the South African Air Force, the Chief of the South African Navy, Surgeon General of the South African Military Health Services, Chief of Joint Operations of the Defense Force, Chief of Defense Intelligence, Chief of Human Resources, and Chief of Logistics. This is the proposal that is being submitted, Chair. that will comprise the military command of the defense force. In clause 3, Chair, the proposal, Chair, is that in section 13 of the Principal Act, Chair, currently the heading states that it's the only state, the chief of the defense force. Therefore, Chair, since now in that particular section have been included appointment of other members of the military command, it is necessary to amend the heading to read that the chief of the defense force and appointment of other members of the military command, because there is going to be a new sub A that is reflected just below that, Chair, that going to state that the members of the military command of the defense force referred to in section 4A, other than the chief of the defense force, are appointed by the president on the recommendation of the minister. That is one proposal, Chair. To move on, Chair, in clause 2 of the bill itself, in one way, the committee agreed to omit clause 2 of the bill, because the military bargaining council has been brought back into the bill. Clause 3 is also reflects that paragraph C should be omitted, as agreed by the committee. And then, Chair, clause 4, in terms of legislative drafting practices, Chair, it was necessary to completely reject it and then bring back a new amendment that's going to reflect what was agreed upon by the committee. Therefore, Chair, on page 3 of the proposed amendment of the A list, under clause 4, that is reflected there, what was agreed in the committee, Chair, that members of the regular force in sub clause 1, members of the regular force and reserve force must receive such pay, salaries, and entitlements, including allowances, disbursements, and other benefits in respect, of, I think there's something missing, Chair, I think there's a typing error. But, Chair, at the end of the day, Chair, what is proposed here, Chair, is that after there is an agreement in the military bargaining council, the minister has to approve this agreement and acting in consultation with the Minister of Finance. That is the proposal. And then, Chair, there was a new subsection that was proposed that if both Chair, that Subclause 2 that was originally in the bill is no longer there, because it is not being amended now. It will remain as it is in the Principal Act. Therefore, it is not necessary now to have it in the AV, because it is not going to be amended at all. Even in the bill, it won't be reflected, because we're not amending subsection 2 at all. Therefore, now we have subsection 3, which is a new proposal. Subsection 3, Chair, as agreed yesterday by the committee, states that in the event that the process is contemplated in subsections 1 and 2, it does not materialize, the minister may take into account any recommendation by the commission and with the approval of the Minister of Finance, determine pay, salaries, and entitlement of members of the Defence Force. In effect, Chair, what this new clause contemplates that if there is no, for any other reason, the military bargaining council is not functioning for any reason, and then and the subclause subsection 2 is unable to be implemented for that reason, then Chair, the minister may fall and be and implement subsection 3. And take into account the recommendations of the commission and waiting with the approval of Minister of Finance, determining to pay his salaries. This is in order to close the gap here, wherein the military bargaining council will be dysfunctional for any reason here, or there is no agreement. In clause 5, Chair, at the moment, at the day there was an agreement that there should be a number of members of the nomination committee. There was on page 5 in 921 of the bill itself, it will be necessary to include, after the word appoint, 5 members of a nomination committee. Therefore, the minister will appoint 5 members of a nomination committee. And Chair, in clause 5 as well, Chair, I will have to include the agreed amendment on page 4, line 45, wherein we will include consultation with the Reserve Force Council. That will be the third amendment in clause 5. Clause 6, Chair, on page 6 of the bill, which is being omitted, Chair, for the reason stated in respect of clause 2 and paragraph C of clause 3. And then in clause 7, there was the issue of, although let me not go there, Chair, I've not had that kind of friend. But the proposal was that, Chair, we should include the words "or without a valid reason" fails. So, Chair, the clause will read as follows, the subclause will read as follows on page 8 of the bill. So, clause 7, it going to say that any person who is liable to render service in the Defense Force by virtue of a military service contract with the Defense Force, and refuses or without a valid reason fails to render such service is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 1 year. So, Chair, that gap has been closed, Chair, wherein there was a concern that a person will be found guilty just by failing to appear for service. Chair, still on page 4 of the A-list, Chair, we'll now go back to the long title, Chair, of the bill. The proposal, Chair, here, that on page 2 of the bill, in the long title itself, since now there is a proposal that the bill should include the military command. So, Chair, the proposal is that there should be an inclusion in the long title to reflect what is contained in the bill, that is the military command of the South African National Defense Force. So, Chair, the inclusion that is proposed is that the bill proposes to amend and to state who comprises military command of the South African National Defense Force, and to further regulate the appointment of its members. This reflects correctly what is going to contain in the Principal Act, Chair. And then, Chair, on the long title again, Chair, it's a technical proposal, Chair, that on the second line, or rather from the second line, to only refer to the Commission rather than the full word South African National Defense Force, to say that South African National, only South African National, and then we remain with the Defense Force. And then, Chair, the last proposal, Chair, is also technical, Chair. You will note that in the long title, in the seventh line, the long title states that there are words like that, the salaries, service benefits, and other conditions of service. Then, Chair, this was just an overkill, Chair, because the conditions of service in themselves, in the definition, they include salaries, service benefits. So, Chair, the proposal is that the committee should accept that the words, the salaries, service benefits, and other are not really necessary, Chair, because they are already covered under the definition of conditions of service, and the conditions of service is reflected in the long title. So, Chair, the further amendments that have been agreed upon in the committee, Chair, will be reflected later on, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
That's the work that you have done throughout this week. The one area that is outstanding, I know that we have not, the Secretary of Defense promised to come back to it, is on reporting 62H. Three, she promised. A report contemplated in subsection 1 must not contain confidential information that would be detrimental to national security. She said she was going to do a reformulation of that particular approach, but it's not mentioned anywhere. I'm not going to, won't respond to it, but I'll allow it as the legal advisor and the team. You promised that you're going to work it out. So we don't have the reformulation, so there's no need. I'm just highlighting that was one thing that was outstanding that you're supposed to have been able to help us with. Is there anything that honorable members want to say? So that there is food today. Yeah, there is food today. So I'm keeping you here until food arrives today. General Mpase. I'll come to you, General.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. Well, I'm not general, I think you know that. First, let me say... First, let me say thanks so much for this elaborate and well-prepared document and changes. And I must say, I think the last sentence where you say conditions of service includes, you know, salaries, etc., I agree with you that we can do with the omission instead of being repetitive. Now, on page 2, page 2 of EIA list, 3B, 1A, the members of the military command of defense force referred to in section, what or that, other than the chief of the defense force, are appointed by the president on the recommendation of the minister. So I want to know who appoints the chief of the defense force, because it says other than the chief of the defense force. Now, somebody is whispering that the president appoints the chief of the defense force, but is it not on the recommendation of the minister of defense then?
No. The chief of defense is appointed by the president on his own.
And recommended,
yes. This one is because there was that gap that who else is in the military command. That's why we have to do them through legislation and give some exercise to the minister. If we agree, of now it stands as a proposal today. Because this is the first time now it's been formally submitted in our eyes. So if you do have an opinion, you can express your opinion. But this is...
The president was going appointing
And what is it now? You're being romantic on this gentleman. Now what happened here, in the process, it has always been lying in the periphery. Today it's in front of us formally. We need to agree. Do we agree that that type of recommendation is the one that has to carry the day, that the minister on her recommendation, then these ones are getting appointed? So the discussion is only starting today, that who is in the military command and who and how do you construct that military command. So you'll be in your legitimate right. That's what I'm trying to say now, that you can express any point of view that they're holding on this matter. Because this matter has always been, we couldn't talk to it because it was not in the bill. Today, if you concluded it, it will go then to the B bill as now what we have agreed on as the committee. So the discussions are open. Do you agree that the military command has expressed, besides the chief of the defense force, are appointed by the president on the recommendation of the minister? Is that what you want? If you agree as a portfolio committee, you say so, and then conclude the matter. I'll start with you, Babum Pasha.
Yeah, I don't have...
Sorry, just the one part that you must not forget, which was part of the Reserve Force Council's submission, which you don't see here, is the Reserve Force head. No. I'm putting forward what was in the hearing. No, if this collective cut, it's cut. You see.
I read my
face. Okay. No, I'm listening to you. Babu Mphahle.
Well, I'm comfortable with the construction or the lineup of who constitutes the military command. However, I think it should be the prerogative of the president, and it should not be the minister recommending and the president appointing. I think all of them, without exception, must be appointed by the president.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think you foresee that I'm going to ask a question. I want to know why the chief of the reserve forces are not part of this command council, because at the moment, the chief of the reserve forces are a member of the command council. Why is he not included? My proposal is that the chief of the reserve forces are included, is included in the command. I don't have a problem, Chairperson, with the appointment by the president of, well, it's constitutional, and that the other appointments are on the recommendation of the minister. It's acceptable for me. I have no problem with the others. I just want to add the chief of the reserve forces to be part of the command. Thank you.
Look, Minister, you are not a general. So you can't discuss matters of generals when you're not a general. Come on, Honorable Minister.
Chair, the amendment in respect to the military command, I mean, this, as you correctly say, has been introduced this morning, and we have not had much opportunity to discuss it. I think we do need an explanation, as the Honorable Groenewald has mentioned, why the Chief of the Reserve Forces has been removed, but equally we need an explanation about why, for example, Chief of Human Resources and Chief of Logistics has been included. I mean, this list has been going backwards and forwards for quite some time, and the names have been changed. I mean, we need a proper explanation from the department about how it is that this list was derived and what criteria they used to derive the list. That's the first point. The second point I'd just like to confirm. My reading of the Constitution is that the president would appoint the military command. And if we define military command as including the following, I think, nine positions, am I correct then that the president would, or is it correct that the president would then appoint military command after consultation or on the recommendation of the minister. I just want some clarity on that. Because it seems to me, on a plain reading of the Constitution, is the president appoints military command, finished and klar. Chair, you asked me to speak on military command. If you'd like me to, could I make another point about the A list? The point, my understanding from Parliament's...
If you're not going to forget, why don't you keep that one so that I can finish the military command, because it's a new understanding and we are raising quite a lot of issues. Can I give Honorable General Mlam, but he's a lieutenant general.
Now you must rank me now, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll go with the suggestion that first, when we say the president is the commander in chief, we simply mean he's the one who should appoint the military command. Those powers are vested on him. I don't think the minister should be included in terms of recommending. It should be the president who determines who comes into the command, because that command structure will be commanded by him as the president. And militarily, it's like that anyway in most of the countries. Thank you.
So, Honorable Mbashel, are you still consulting there? It looks as if Honorable Khrunawas, many feelings in this meeting says it has to remain with the president. Let him be the main commander, the commander-in-chief, and let him put together the military command. Now, I just want to check the constitutionality there. Banara, do you have your constitution? Oh, that's right. You are also going to raise... I'm not sure if you are going to be able to tell us that why did the list keep on changing. But maybe the head of legal will be able to see that. But let's start there at the end of the parliament. Give us the advice here. The members feel that it has to remain with the president, and many have now even gone far to say that the Constitution commands us to keep it like that. There's no inclusion of ministers recommending to the president who should be in the military command. So the legislation has to speak to the Constitution.
Yes, Honorable Chairperson, I think
you have
Section 202 of the Constitution.
How we are glad to get Nifume. I guess, but not about, I'm a member of the Parliament of Guadix now.
If we go to subsection 1, that is the one that is in brackets, this reads as follows. The President, as head of the National Executive, is Commander-in-Chief of the Defense Force, comma, and must appoint the military command of the Defense Force, full stop. Now, the reading of this particular subsection is clear and does not have any qualification. Now, a qualification that is proposed in the bill or in the A-list seems to insert, in a way, a qualification, if one were to loosely put it that way. But that it raises the question, can the Constitution be amended through national legislation? I don't think that would be correct. My view would be, yes, it is a policy decision to subject that appointment process to a recommendation of the minister. But that policy decision, in my view, would have to be, if it was to be properly done, it would have to be a constitutional amendment. It would not have to come indirectly through a national legislation. Therefore, in my view, the proposed amendment would subject this bill, if it were to be accepted, to possible potential constitutional challenges, which in my view, a strong possibility exists that such a challenge would succeed. Thank you, sir. Then on the second issue of the military command, I think could be done is the department will have to make up its mind on whether the military command excludes the proposed amendment, and that it remains the chief of defense. But if they want to keep it that way, it's going to be problematic, because that will then necessitate, as I say, that constitutional amendment. Yeah, I think that is my comment so far.
So, Babu Kopa.
No, Tata, and this, we don't have to move. The table is open.
Could I just hear him on the last part? I just didn't get it.
No, what the point I was trying to make is, if you want to have those chiefs appointed on the recommendations of the minister, then you will have to take them out of the military command. Because once you put them in the definition of military command, then you're subjecting themselves, their appointments, to strictly by the president. That's the point I was making.
Ngendlela obuyisimakulisa ini ungayizama kwakhona mfana kuthi. Nami I'm a democrat in this. I give you an opportunity to express yourself. Ila ne smuggling yakho mtshana. Izanayo.
Che, I don't know what to say for the first time. maybe I should speak to the principal, Chair. The technicalities are quite interesting, and I think the argument that Mr. Vanara is making is compelling. Chair, Section 202 requires the President to appoint the command, military command. Now we understand the concept of military command to be collective in its nature. It cannot be an individual. That is our understanding. That's why we take it further than the Chief of the Defense Force, and we include the list. As to who should be in the list or should not be in the list, the criteria we have used up to now is the command responsibility, and that it should at least be at a three-star level within the Department of Defense. Now, the three-star level is the Chiefs of Services and Divisions. In this case, all the The Chief of the Army, Chief of the Air Force, Chief of the Navy, Surgeon General, Chief of Joint Operations, Chief of Defense Intelligence, Chief of Human Resources, and Chief of Logistics are based on command responsibility. So that's the criteria we've used to select those people. That is the people that have a direct responsibility to command the forces. Now, a question was asked about the Chief of Defense Reserve. Now, Chief of the Defense Reserve is an advisor to the Chief in as far as the reserve force is concerned, but does not have any command responsibility. He does not command forces. The people I've just given you now are the people who are actually the commanders of the forces. But the Chief of the Chief Defense Reserve does not have forces and therefore cannot command, but these are the people who actually command the forces. So that is the criteria, Chair. And on the issue, Chair, of the appointment, really, I think the proposed Clause 3 with regard to the appointment is really a matter of process. And I think we will leave it to the committee to debate its merits and its demerits as to whether we should prescribe process. But I think it is practice now in government that there is consultation before appointments are made and all those things. Whether we need to prescribe it in law is another issue. I think it's a policy decision that this committee should take, Chair. Thank you very much.
I was a commander in chief, but not anymore. Coming chairperson, let me get some clarity on this. You see, the constitution, as you correctly read it, is clear that the president is the commander-in-chief of our forces, and that he appoints the military command of the defense force. But it doesn't say who he should appoint. In other words, it doesn't stipulate the ranks of people who should be appointed. Am I correct in that, in saying that? And if that is the position, the suggestion by the department that these chiefs should be appointed into the military command, which makes sense to me anyway. It would mean, therefore, that we have to amend the constitution. Not necessarily. He's shaking his head. He says, no, we don't have to amend the constitution. I don't know how we're going to do it, whether if the president appoints the chiefs of these other these things, whether the president cannot be challenged in court and say, where do you get authority to appoint Chief of the Defense Force, Chief of the Southern Army, and so on and so forth into the command, military command? Will there be no challenges to the president in court by a representative of the DA or a representative of whatever. So I'm just a bit worried about that. But if of course when you say it has to be worked in appointing the committee, the command, the military command, when such as in consultation with this and so on and so forth are not there. But obviously, of course, when a prime minister or a president appoints his cabinet, he consults certain people. The minister, the president will also be consulting other people. Who are the best people to serve in the military command? It doesn't have to be written down. But he does consult other people, isn't it? Yeah. So, we should be clear about that. But yes.
General.
He does consult other people.
Now we'll consult.
Even you, he can consult.
Yeah.
He can consult those who are in the army themselves. Chief of staff, chief of the army, chief of the police, of the force. Who do you think is qualified to serve on this command? But if there is no possibility of the president being challenged in court, if he appoints his ranks here, I support it. I support the suggestion put forward here.
Now, the constitution of Vanaro interpreted it correctly to say that and must appoint the military command. And from the presentation of the minister, she said then, if members of parliament would recall, that because the legislation that was written then didn't go into this type of detail, that's why it was important for us to come back and do it in a manner through legislation of who are those people who are being termed as the military command. So this is what we are submitting to and saying that this is the military command that we are constructing. So there's no challenge about that. We're doing it through legislation. And there now seems to be substance into why the chief of the reserve force can't come in. We have acknowledged what the reserve council has presented to us. But from what the department is presenting to us, that they aren't commanding any forces. So we shouldn't fragment them in our approach. Because if you deal with logistics, where I hear from is that you can't then command when you don't even know what logistics do you have. That's how logistics. And you can't command when you don't even have intelligence-driven approaches. That's how intelligence come in. And human resource is their soldiers. So it's important that it becomes part of the commanding structure. And reserve force, if it comes to human resources, have to be defined within that. So from what I hear, it seems as if there isn't a substantial ground for the reserve force to, the general of the reserve force to be included in the command structure. I'm just trying to make sense of what we're being told today, which is very educated. And then what Mr. Vanara is saying, which is that here the department is really on getting the minister to advise or to get the minister to participate in creating of the command, it's a little bit of a, it can really take us to the Constitutional Court and get us into problems. So maybe as legislators we will stick to allow and interpret the Constitution that is of benefit to us, that says it should be the prerequisite of the president to constitute the military command. And we are submitting through legislation up until I, the chief of logistics, all these people, that's what the military command would be known of, as of if we agree to legislation as of today and onwards, unless there's a different reasoning. But I think Mr. Vanara has interpreted the Constitution quite correctly. I don't hear any other person saying from all the legal representatives there's something wrong with that type of interpretation, and the department is conceding that it is a constitutional matter. And all of us derive our mandate from the Constitution before we do this type of legislation. So it will be very difficult for us to smuggle in the minister to be consulted through this process. There's nothing that commands us in the Constitution to ask the president to consult the minister. If he does it with the ministry, he would have to do it in close corners in the darkness of the night. But through the law, it's just not possible. That's what the law says and that's what the Constitution says. If you want to contest that, it's in your power. There it is, Honorable Member. Honorable Krolva?
Chairperson, I'm quite surprised this moment. I can't understand why we have the Chief of the Reserve Forces as part of the Military Command Council at present. Why is he there? If he's not commanding anybody, because he's surely not as an advisory member of the Military Command Council. He's even a member of the military, the Staff Command Council of the Defense at the moment. Now I must hear that he's only there an advisory body. Who commands the reserves then? If you have a person who's a commander of logistics, who's commanding the reserves? They're going on peace operations. A complete platoon or section of reserves. How can we say they don't command them if they're only there as advisory? And if I look at the Act, Section 11 of the Principal Act says quite clearly, it says the South African National Defense Force established by Section 224 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, Section 11. Correct. Continues to exist and consists of the regular force, A, and B, the reserve force.
Just be patient. I've got an old man here, Tata Matakuma. Mboni to Tata, Rafa. No, it's in the Principal Act, Tata.
Yeah, the Principal Act, Section 11, sir. But the Principal Act says the composition of the South African National Defense Force consists of the regular force as well as the reserve force. That is what the Principal Act says. If we look at the services, actually it's only the Army, the Air Force, the Navy and the Military Health Services. That's actually according to the Principal Act, but we include, besides that, we now include the Chief of Defense, Intelligence, Human Resources, Logistics, and so forth. So we are prepared to add to the command services which are not really, according to the Principal Act, are recognized as services. Because the Principal Act only recognizes the services as the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, and the Military Health Services. So with great respect, Chairperson, I can't understand that we cannot include the Chief of Reserve Forces in the Command Council, or as part as the Military Command, because it is quite clear from the Principal Act that the Defense Force consists of the regular force and the reserve forces. And to say they are not commanded, I can't understand. So I feel very serious about this, Chairperson, because if we put this through, then we actually say that the Chief of the Reserve Forces are now going to be, after this bill has been passed, he cannot be part of the Command Council, the Military Command Council anymore, which he is at this moment. I will really seriously ask the committee members to reconsider this and to include the Chief of Reserve Forces in the military command. Thank you, Chair.
I was also thinking that you are going to give us some in the act to show us where is the military command being constituted. Is it there somewhere in the principal act? Military command. No, not council. We are putting together military command. Yes. So we don't want to be confused. It's never been in the principal act. So it has been an issue of some sucking around there at head office. That is should then decide that, hey, my brother, you look very beautiful, come in and join in the military command. No, we are taking a serious decision. That's the difference with what they used to do before. I'll come to that. I'll take a note of it. I'm just saying that the military command before have never been constituted, and it's not they've been commanded by any legislation. This is the first legislation that we are commanding how to constitute that structure. So I do take the comments that says what used to happen, it's history now, if we agree that this is how we're going to constitute this institution. And in how it's going to be constituted, that it has to be done by the Chief of, by the president himself, as commanded by cabinet. So then it becomes really a new formation at all. So it's a question of persuading members of the committee to consider if the military, the reserve force, general could be brought on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I have taken note of your data. I wanted to start with Mazia, and I've got Honorable Menier, and I got Utatu Mlange. I'll come to the legal representative. I just wanted to. The matter is in front of the committee now. What is your views, members?
Chairperson. Having Uvavu Mlangeni also going to speak, I would prefer that you take your cue and then I will check if Utatu Mlangeni have not covered me, then I will raise my hand.
Thank you, Chair. You mentioned you used the term, since we've been fairly sensitive about words, thumbsuck. It's not a term that I've used, but it seems to me that the department have thumbsucked this list. My question was, let's look at precedent. Can the department tell us what is international practice? Where else in the world does the president or head of state, if they're a different person, appoint members of the military command right down to divisional chief? I'd like your view on where that takes place in other jurisdictions. What is best practice in this case? I do support the Honorable Groenewald. I do think that the Chief of Reserves should be part of this group. But I have a very serious question about whether it's necessary to include, for example, the divisional heads of logistics, human resources, and defense intelligence. Those formations are support formations. They support Chief of Defense, Chief of Navy, Chief of Air Force, and Chief of Army in the field. And Chair, I think this is an important issue. We need to take some time to consider this. And I think that we should start with what is international, if you like, what are the trends, what are the best practices? This cannot be some structure.
No, on your last comment, that's why I'm saying that the discussion is open today. It's formal. We're not concluding on it. It had to come finally in the formal processes. So it is here now. So I'll also say that it's also upon you to do your researches now up until Tuesday, and we'll conclude the matter. Okay, say something? Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I do think that we need to know for the department to tell us what international best practice is. We also need a proper explanation of why this list was compiled in the way it was. But I think what the department have never properly conveyed to our committee is this whole question arises out of a particular problem, I understand. And the problem had something to do with the appointment of the chief of intelligence. What was the problem? And once again, to use our parliamentary legal advisor's term, what mischief are we trying to solve? Are we trying to remedy? We need a detailed explanation of what the problem is. Thank you.
I know some of your intelligence gatherers are not here today. So we'll stick to what we know and what we've been told. How you sounds like your information is something else. Yes. So I would really entertain what is in front of us. I'm not going to confirm anything here today. That,
there is no question of departments from sucking anything. They brought forward the suggestion, and we do not have to follow the examples of other countries in everything we do here in South Africa. We are an independent, sovereign country. We may study how other countries do things, but we do not necessarily have to do what those countries are doing. Our conditions are different, and they can never be the same as, for example, the conditions in China, Russia, America, Britain, or whatever, or Botswana, if you like. They can never be the same. So that we don't have to exactly do what other countries are doing. Especially when it comes to such an important institution as the Defense Force. We've got to be very careful. What General Groenewald doesn't mention is that the defense, the Reserve Force is a temporary thing. It's not employed full-time in the army. Not full-time. It's there contracted on a temporary basis. Now, unlike these other formations here, they are full-time. They are there every day in the force. Every day. Now, how can I go and have somebody who's on a temporary basis put him on a level, a high level as that of other formations, and say he must be part of that? I don't think it will be correct. Ladies and gentlemen, or gentlemen and ladies, whichever is correct. Thank you.
I didn't understand sometimes. What were you doing in sport? I simply don't understand. Yes, go back at that.
Yeah. Chairperson, I'm not sure why we are even debating and going to the extent where we also want to include the reserve force. Because even though, I don't know, even though possibly it is not in the way that it is structured on the amendment, but you have in the main act, yes, where they describe the services that are provided in the army, and those services are prescribed in the way that they have been commanded. Some of the areas may have been left because they are not inclusive of the list that we have. But the other truth, Chairperson, is that the Reserve Force always use delegated powers. They can't use full powers. They will always use delegated powers, because when the Reserve Force comes in, it will not just come in and go to the field without it being under command of a full-time officer. Yes, there will always be a full-time officer. And all the other ranks will function under delegated powers. Now, Chairperson, I think we should put this thing to rest and accept that this is how it should be structured.
Now, you see why I want to take it away from legal and the department. I want it to become a parliamentary decision. Within its own weaknesses, we'll address it ourselves. So I was just calling on you to be very patient with us so that I can come to a decision. We might not agree or decide today, but I'm just saying today, other people are saying, let's close the discussion and accept what is being proposed in front of us. I just want to take opinion on that. Can I start with Honorable Kunabat and I'll come back to General Mpahle?
Chairperson, we must really be very careful now. Firstly, I, with great respect towards my colleague, the reserve forces don't operate under delegated powers. That's not true. If they go on operation, yes, of course, you will always have a operational commander, but they have the same powers. Their sections or their platoons are members from the reserve force. It's not that you have a permanent or a regular force corporal or lieutenant that's going to command them. It's the reserve force members. The moment a reserve force member is called up, he or she is as a normal, ordinary soldier. And if you're a lieutenant, then you're a lieutenant, and you operate as that. If you're a general, you function as a general, even if you are a member of the reserve forces, and by respected colleague is quite right. They are not full-time there. But the moment they've been called up, they function exactly the same as a regular force member of the defense force. Now, I want to go back to the principle at Jefferson. If we say that we are only going to define the command, and it is actually why we're doing it is because the Constitution is referring to the military command, but there's not a definition in the Constitution. Now, we want to try to define it now by legislation. If we want to be true as far as legislation is concerned, then we can only define it as far as the services are concerned, and that is a Section 11 of the Principal Act that's referring to the Air Force, the Army, the Health Services, and so forth. Then we can only define it up to there. And actually, that is the proposal from the Honorable Mayor, that we cannot then include, for instance, the head of logistics. I differ on that. I feel, because if you look at the principle of commanding, and I think the present Command Council, the Military Command Council.
I just want you to speak to the issue, or the issue that I've now raised, in terms of amendment of the Principal Act. What does that imply in terms of legislation, in the processes? Because you see, Danny, why I'm saying is that I just want you to say to that we should not amend 12 at all. If that's what you are implying by your argument, I just want you to put that as.
I don't understand, sir. If you.
I'm saying that those. You are saying that 12 as it stands must stand. But I thought that we are doing amendments to legislation, and the Principal Act is subjected to that argument now. So I'm just saying that if you say that, let's not touch 12 because. Yes, you see what I want to take out of the purview also is what we have been hearing outside
we are dealing with what is presented to us today, you see, and the discussion amongst ourselves is starting today. Let's not, whatever we have heard before or how the list and everything has been coming, let's deal with the matter as is. Why I'm allowing you to argue your point is because this is a submission by the Reserve Force Council, and I'm listening to that argument based on that. But beyond that one, and you are using your experiences, I've got no problem. What I don't know, but why I'm raising my point now is that amendments, those who are dealing with amendments, and it seems as if part of the commanding structure and how we want to do it, it falls under amendments. If there's something wrong with that, I would want you to put your opinion so that we can see where we are going wrong before I call on all our legal people to assist us in that particular situation.
Chairperson, if I understand you correctly, I don't say that we have to amend Section 12. I don't touch on that. I use it as an argument to say that if we want to amend the bill, as the proposal is here on the table at this moment, you must have a guideline or a principle why you have these names or this list as the military command. Now, I take my guidance for the list. The one way to do it is to say, okay, you take only the chiefs of services. If you take that route, then I refer to Section 12. Don't amend it, but then it should only be the services mentioned in Section 12 of the Principal Act. But I agree that we can extend the list. We only don't have to confine it to Section 12 of the Principal Act. Because I do understand, when you have a command council, then, for instance, the Chief of Intelligence is important, because if you have that council meeting, your Chief of Intelligence must provide certain information. The Chief of Logistics, for instance, if there's an operation that there are certain information to be provided in the command council. But then I say equally, and let I just put, I don't even know exactly what the proposal from the reserve forces, I'm having my own proposal. I'm not going on the proposal of the reserve forces, maybe, of course, they want it in, but I don't know exactly the argument, so I'm following my own argument. To say that practice has proved that they need also the Chief of the Reserve Forces there, because it is at present that if they have certain operations, they need that advice. If they want to send a Reserve Force platoon on a mission in Africa, then they ask him, do you have the people? Are they well trained or not? They ask the Chief of Intelligence, what is the situation? How many people do we need there? He asked the Chief of Logistics, but do we have the equipment to go on this operation? And that's why I say, if that is what is happening in practice, then I say, yes, extend the list. Don't define it only to Section 12. But if we extend the list, then the arguments to include, for instance, the Chief of Logistics, the Chief of Human Resources, and all that chiefs, then I say it is just fair and it is enhancing the command of the Defense Force to include the Chief of the Reserve Forces. Why do you want to exclude him now? If he was not necessary, and if the Chief of the Reserve Forces didn't play really an important role, then at present, the chief would not have been part of the military command council. The practice at present shows me and proves to me that the military command of the SANDF feels that he is an integral part, just as the chief of logistics and everybody like that. And that's why I say, if I want to follow the argument on a logic way, to say if you include those other people, not only the heads of the services, then it's just logic that you include the Chief of the Reserve Forces. So that is my argument, Chairperson, and I would really ask the majority of the governing party to rethink this and think that we need these people. In fact, they are on many operations in Africa. In fact, I can say that I don't think there's, at one stage, we can take the last year for instance, that there were not members of the reserve forces deployed in the SANDF. And I don't think it will be to the benefit of the command of the SANDF if we exclude the chief of the reserve forces. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mpahlele. I have Honorable Mlambo.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
I'll give you. No, I must first give my members to satisfy themselves. Yes, don't suffer.
Honorable Mpahlele. I think you were discussing the military council. I mean the military command. And of course, Honorable Nevald, frequent reference of military command council where the reserve force is represented, it may not be helpful to take us forward because I think let us zero in, let us focus on the military command. And the explanation that was given earlier on by the defense legal team, why it was excluded, I think is a very, very convincing explanation. And yes, Honorable Kurnavald, no argument that if they're in the military command, they can be asked, you know, about this and that. Surely I don't think it's a precondition for them to answer, even if they are not there, if they are asked by the army, they'll have to comply because that's what military discipline is all about. You cannot say, if I'm not represented in the military command, I'm going to cooperate less or not cooperate at all. My position is that I think really the reserve force should be excluded from the military command based on the explanation that was given earlier on by the defense legal team.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe just to add, you know, when you talk of reserves, they've got their own specialities. And they when there's a call-up, they go into different fields, which those fields are of the South African National Defense Force, you know. If it belongs to the South African Air Force, during the call-up, he will be deployed there. So that is why I believe that they shouldn't be part of the military command because they don't operate separately from these other entities. Thank you.
I'm not saying the majority of our members do feel that the reserve force general should not be included in the military command. That's the view of the majority. Why I had allowed you, sir, to express your point of view. I always want us to help each other, to educate each other, so that we understand the institution that we are representing. So it's based on that that I really have been trying to get persuaded. But as you could hear, that the majority of members do feel that it's important that the Reserve Force Council, I mean the Reserve Force General, stays out of the military command. That is the feeling. But as round one of the discussion has now taken place, I think we should move forward. And then we'll conclude the matter on Tuesday before we formally conclude. But it stands now that the majority of our members do accept that. I accept that there have been different presentations that have been presented to us. So, and I was just trying to recapture what was given by
Lieutenant General Mukwege on the 10th. The 10th of June, as part of the presentations here. He has then said on behalf of the SNDF, by defining military command in the Defense Act, the department would eliminate confusion of who constitutes this structure. The proposed definition, specifically the inclusion of the chiefs of the SNDF reserves and intelligence, was informed by the planning needs of the SNDF when preparing for a conflict or phase with war. The reserve force is a force multiplier, while defense intelligence is required to gather information in preparation for and during a conflict. The president would only appoint the military command, while the military command council would be appointed by the Minister of Defense. So these are two separate institutions. I'm just reading what he presented there. Yeah. So I'm just saying that there's been a military explanation to the argument. You see, which is what the secretary was just bringing to my attention to say that there has been some arguments that have been presented on the 10th of June. So the majority of our members feel that we shouldn't include the reserve force. I mean, the reserve force at this particular moment. And as the people who legislate, I have to leave it into your capable hands. And it seems as if the majority is saying that let's have what we have in front of us, and that's what we are going to include in the legislation. Do you want us to pursue, or do you want us to come back on Tuesday and finalize the matter?
Can I just say one thing final, Chairperson, and that will be the last thing. What you said is quite right, because if you look at Section 12.2, it derives from there, because it says the minister may establish a structural component consisting of members of any of the services, and either a regular force, a reserve force, or both. I agree. But my argument is, Chairperson, and then it's my question then, for clarity, that I can think about it. I want an answer from the department there. If they include the head of intelligence, the head of human resources, the head of logistics in the command, on what basis do they do that? What is the criteria that they took the decision to add those heads or chiefs in the command? Because according to the Constitution then, and the Principal Act, the command, from a legal point of view, should then only consist of the chiefs of the services, which is then the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, and the Health Services, from a legal point of view. What criteria did they use? And I'd like to get that answer now. To make a decision on legal grounds to add those people. Thank you, Chair.
You know why I want as the department to respond to this? It's because I saw that there are people who run the operation virtually every day, and this appeal is coming from them. And these are more of legal representatives that are trying to put an interpretation into law. I can only allow them to go as far as that. I appear to attempting to say how the operations are being run by the defense and what. I take it that this is information because I've been with you for a very long time in Parliament. So I'm just saying that the information you're using at this particular moment is like second-guessing information that is used by myself, meeting a person, having a chat with him, and he tells me how it goes. The people who run the military command that has been constructed for the past 14 to 15 years aren't here at this particular moment. And it always gets very difficult to use a legal advisor to get into an argument where he is not operational. The Defense Forces, that Mlangeni was saying, it's an important institution. And it's based on that I want to treat it like that. That argument, that this type of engagement is a political and a very important one. But if you want to get into the people who really are operational, it's the Chief of Defense and its different components in there that can give us in detail what does the reserve force do, you see, and how do they think it adds or augments strength to what he is doing, you see. So it gets out of the preview
of having practicalities or operational discussions. Members of parliament, they themselves, from their own experiences or from how they think about it, they think there's no, and when they interpret the law and they interpret what is in the legislation, they think there's nothing more that is convincing them to pursue the argument that we are pursuing. That is their own feeling as members of parliament. So these are two separate entities, and they as legislators feel totally different. But because you do have extra information, this is why I'm saying it's always difficult when you work on second guess, because I would have to allow all other members to come and second guess about what goes on in the military command at this particular moment. And I'm, like Honorable Mlambo also has expressed his own point of view that he thinks out of what he has read and what he knows, the reserve force is not going to help. And, I mean, the general is not going to help in the commanding structure. So I'm just saying there are cross and different views, but the majority of members stand says, let's reemphasize that the chief of the reserve force can't be involved in the military command. And in terms of legalities, you have read and you have heard that this is an amendment that has been put forward to us all, and we are trying to deal with that amendment. And there hasn't been anything that has been seen wrong for us to amend that 12 or amend that 11. It's within our purview as members of parliament to do that responsibility. And Honorable Mlangeni said practices can be exchanged in variety because you've got different experiences in different parts. But those practices doesn't stop us as legislators to come to a decision. And this is where I would have to conclude the business around this particular matter today. I'll give you an opportunity to exercise and as members to keep on talking to each other until Tuesday morning. If there's nothing that is convincing, all members would have to legislate in accordance to the feeling and the understanding of the majority of the members of the committee. But because it has only been done today, I'll give you that opportunity only then. You can talk to Mazia, you can talk to Dr. Mlangeni. It's in the strength of your responsibilities as different members. But on Tuesday, we'll have to take the decision finally and insert it into the bill. So that Bill B will come in, and it means that the committee has finalized the process itself, and we then vote everything into that. So at this moment, I'm really closing. So the argument that you have, nobody in the committee is contesting to say the constitutionality, we stand by it. The department and everybody will have to concede that the addition that brings in the minister, if we don't want to lengthen and take the process very longer, we can't take that test. As a committee at this moment, we don't want to go to that length of changing the constitution to include the minister to start putting the military command. The military command will stand as it interpreted in the constitution that it is the responsibility of the president to do that. And what we are going to be agreeing upon will end with the president, that he puts together the military command. We are very sympathetic to the view of the ministry, but we can't do much about that. We are guided by the constitution to define the legislation itself. So, honorable members, is there any other thing that we have on the A list? We must then also like thank you, State Law Advisor, for being able to listen to us and being able to capture our views in a correct manner. We are very thankful when people do very good and outstanding work amongst ourselves. We always have to congratulate you for being able to do that. But all of you have been very, very, very good team of people who have made us to be able to produce this type of legislation. Legal advisor from Parliament, you know that you will be the final one on Tuesday to give us the final views of your legalities and the constitutionality of the total bill on Tuesday. So I would want you to go through in a file comp and then tell us on Tuesday that are we transgressing anything. If we don't transgress anything, we'll be final and we'll pass it and we'll take it over to the necessary people. But the issue that is outstanding from your side, please do that thing on national security for us. Give us something tangible so that we could understand, so that we don't seem to run around. We have promised that you do have an explanation for that. You'll be able to give it to us. Give us early on Tuesday so that you can deal with it. Honorable members, if there's anything or nothing that you want to say this moment, the meeting stands adjourned until Tuesday. As I said, that the program will follow up in detail of what you do after you've adopted the bill on Tuesday. Thank you very much, and have a good Friday. But next Friday, there's meeting.